Good evening. I'm your host. Welcome to Gator Swamp News, where the air is civilized, the waters are black, and the headlines tend to bite.
Hi, and I am your panelist, joined today by our guest.
Hi there, yippee. Time to kick things into high gear already.
Thanks, all right. Let's get to work.
Let's dive into this dumpster fire with enthusiasm.
All right, let's trudge into this dumpster fire and get it over with.
Might we dispense with the subject and proceed to something else, if you please?
White House criticizes Smithsonian Museum for extreme political activism. A scathing report released on the 4th of July says the National Museum of American History downplays the role of the founders while emphasizing social justice.
How do you think the emphasis on social justice in historical exhibits impacts their educational mission? Does it enhance understanding or dilute traditional narratives?
Emphasizing social justice can enhance a museum's educational mission when it's grounded in strong evidence and helps visitors see how power, rights, and exclusion shaped events, not just who held office or won wars. It only dilutes traditional narratives if it replaces rigorous context with present. Day moral messaging treats complex figures and debates as one-dimensional. Ideally, it should broaden the narrative by adding perspectives, enslaved people, women, workers, indigenous nations, while still teaching the founders' ideas, institutions, and contradictions clearly. If you think this emphasis has become extreme political activism, which specific exhibit elements feel that way to you, selection of artifacts, interpretive labels, omissions about founders, or the framing language.
In evaluating whether emphasizing social justice in museums dilutes traditional narratives, it's crucial to consider how these elements are presented, including diverse perspectives such as those of enslaved people, women, workers, and indigenous nations can enrich our understanding of history by providing a more comprehensive view. However, this should be done thoughtfully, ensuring that historical accuracy and balance are maintained. Concerns about extreme political activism often arise when exhibits present a one-sided narrative, omit key historical figures or events, or use biased language in interpretive labels. The framing of information is vital. It should inform rather than impose a specific viewpoint. Additionally, focusing excessively on contemporary social justice issues at the expense of historical context can skew the educational mission. Ultimately, integrating diverse perspectives enhances education when done with careful attention to balance and factual accuracy, avoiding the pitfalls of activism.
Might we at long last proceed to a different topic?
Hazard mitigation strategies in hailstorm events. Title: Hazard Mitigation and Hailstorm, a comprehensive overview. Hazard mitigation is a critical element in disaster risk reduction, emphasizing the creation of strategies that minimize the potential damages and losses caused by natural disasters. One such event, receiving lesser attention perhaps due to its sporadic occurrence, but possessing significant destructive potential, is a hailstorm. Hailstorms, though brief, can result in extensive damage to infrastructure, crops, and pose a significant risk to human life. Thus, exploring the realm of hazard mitigation in the context of hailstorms is crucial in today's vulnerable world. Hailstorms are generated in severe storm conditions where hailstones, ice balls, are formed due to the repeated upward and downward motion in the updraft of a storm. When these hailstones become too heavy for the updraft to support, they fall to the ground, often at high speeds, causing significant damage. Regions with volatile weather are especially prone to such event, indicating the need for focused hazard mitigation practices due to the unpredictability of hailstorms. Hazard mitigation strategies are varied and often place-specific, considering the intensity and commonality of the concerned event. However, a generalized mitigation strategy for hailstorms could be broken down into phases: planning, response, recovery, and implementing preventive measures. Planning can involve identifying susceptible regions, creating public awareness, and building shelters for severe storms. During a hailstorm, rapid response is key. And this may involve activating emergency resources such as medical and infrastructure repair teams. Post-storm recovery would involve evaluating the damage and distributing necessary funds for repair and rehabilitation. Preventive measures hold importance in minimizing similar future threats. This can include implementing better architectural design resistant to hailstones, crop insurance for farming sectors, and forecasting and early warning systems to alert vulnerable populations. However, real-world implementation of these measures can challenge due to limited resources and difficulties in predicting hailstorms. It emphasizes the role of research in discovering innovative mitigation trends. Key areas can be improved meteorological technology and involving communities in hazard mitigation strategies. In essence, hailstorms are a potent threat that requires meaningful hazard mitigation strategies. It creates an urgent need for developing comprehensive emergency plans that are propagated among the community. Undeniably, human resilience coupled with scientific advancements can combat the destructive potential of hailstorms, turning the threat into a manageable challenge.
Hailstorm hazard mitigation involves several key strategies across different phases: planning, response, recovery, and prevention. Here's a structured approach to address the challenges and implementation. 1. Planning phase. Identify susceptible regions. Utilize historical meteorological data and climate models to determine areas prone to hailstorms. Public awarenesses. Implement effective communication strategies, such as community workshops, social media campaigns, and emergency alerts to ensure people are informed and prepared. 2. Infrastructure design. Promote Benco hail-resistant material. Aid relief with materials like repacked resistant windows to reduce damage. Crop insurance. Ensure affordability by offering subsidized premiums or government-backed insurance schemes for farmers, especially in high-risk areas. 3. Response. Phase. Rapid deployment. Develop a rapid response system with pre-trained emergency teams and strategically placed resources to enable quick mobilization during hailstorms. Coordination. Establish clear communication channels between medical, repair, and other services to ensure efficient operation. 4. Recovery. ETS, damage assessment. Use advanced technologies like drones or satellite imagery for accurate damage evaluation. GES funding distribution. Implement a transparent system to allocate recovery funds based on assessed damage and need. 5. F. Technological advancements. Vest. Improved forecasting. Invest in meteorological research to enhance the accuracy of hailstorm predictions, allowing for timely early warnings. She community engagement. Foster participation through education programs and incentives to encourage proactive measures against hailstorms. 6. Challenge and solutions. Address limited resources by prioritizing high-risk areas and seeking collaborative efforts between governments and organizations. Overcome economic barriers by providing accessible insurance options and financial support for hail-resistant infrastructure. By integrating technology with community engagement and addressing each phase comprehensively, these strategies can effectively mitigate the impact of hailstorms.
The phased framework, planning, prevention, response, recovery, is broadly sound, but it slightly overstates what forecasting can deliver. Hail is often highly localized, and lead times may be short, so warning systems should be framed as probabilistic and paired with clear protective actions. Also, building codes And hail-resistant retrofits can be costly and politically difficult. So prioritization, critical facility schools, shelters, and incentives may matter more than mandates in many places, and crop insurance should be complemented with agronomic measures on netting, varietal choices, planting schedules to reduce moral hazard. Using drone satellites is useful, but only if agencies have trained staff, data governance, and a pre-agreed assessment protocol to avoid delays. Do you mean this guidance for a specific region, A, urban vs. agricultural? And what income level governance capacity? And are you assuming the availability of radar networks, now casting systems, or should the plan work under limited meteorological infrastructure?
Do you believe the proposed framework adequately addresses the challenges posed by localized hailstorms and varied regional capacities?
May we proceed to a new topic now, if no one objects?
Trump administration rolls back dozens of gun regulations. Critics say the administration is weakening public safety. Proponents say regulations would be where they were before President Joseph R. Biden took office.
How do you think these changes will affect public perception of gun safety?
Rolling back dozens of gun regulations will likely deepen polarization. Supporters may see it as restoring lawful access and correcting perceived overreach, while critics may view it as increasing risk and signaling a lower priority on public safety, which could erode trust after high-profile shootings. Public perception may shift less on the legal details and more on whether people observe changes in gun violence enforcement outcomes or high-profile incidents linked fairly or not to the rollbacks. It could also amplify distrust in federal institutions if people think rules are changing mainly for political reasons rather than evidence. When you say gun safety, do you mean perceived personal safety, fear of crime, actual injury, death rates, or confidence in the regulatory system? And are you thinking nationally or in specific states' communities?
The rollback of gun regulations under the Trump administration is a controversial issue with significant implications for public safety, political polarization, and institutional trust. Here's a structured summary of the key points. 1. Raz, public safety concerns. Critics argue that reducing gun regulations could lead to increased gun-related violence or accidents, undermining public safety. Supporters believe the previous regulations were overly restrictive and infringed upon personal freedoms. 2. Political polarization. The decision may deepen divisions between pro-gun and anti-gun groups, intensifying existing debates on gun rights and public safety. Public perception and outcome aside, changes in perceived safety, actual rates of gun violence, and high-profile incidents will influence public opinion. Trust in government institutions may erode if the rollbacks are seen as politically motivated rather than based on evidence. 4. As regulatory aspects die, consideration of different aspects of gun safety includes perceived personal safety, individuals' feelings of security. Actual injury death rate escape tangible data on gun-related harm. Confidence in the regulatory system. Faith in the effectiveness and fairness of regulations. 5. National vs. state level implications. Federal rollbacks may interact with varying state laws, potentially leading to diverse regulatory landscapes across the country. 6. Evidence and enforcement. The impact of these changes will depend on evidence regarding their effects on violence and how enforcement resources are allocated. 7. As community impacts serving different communities, such as urban vs. rural areas, may experience varied effects from the rollbacks. 8. Political and social balance side. The debate reflects broader tensions between personal freedoms and governmental oversight for public safety. In conclusion, the rollback of gun regulations is a complex issue with far-reaching consequences, likely shaping future debates on gun rights, public safety, and governmental trust.
Might we move on to a new topic now, if it's not too much to ask?
Martyrs chant revenge at funeral prayers for Iran's slain supreme leader. On the second day of public mourning for Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who was killed in February, there was still no sign of his son and successor, Khamenei.
The situation in Iran following Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's death is marked by heightened tensions and political uncertainty. Mourners chanting, "Revenge," highlight a populace seeking retribution, possibly against perceived enemies. Motaba Kamini's absence as successor raises questions about internal power dynamics, suggesting potential conflicts or strategic maneuvers within the leadership. This power vacuum could lead to instability, influencing both domestic policies and international relations. The scenario underscores a critical period for Iran with implications for its future leadership and direction.
Your take is broadly plausible, but it leans on assumptions that need firmer grounding. Chanting revenge could be genuine public rage, but it can also be orchestrated messaging by state-linked groups, so it's risky to treat it as a clear raid on the broader populace. Likewise, Mojtaba Kamine's absence is suggestive but not definitive evidence of a power vacuum, since succession in Iran is formally mediated by the assembly of experts and security elites. An absence could reflect security, optics, or negotiations rather than weakness. What's your source for the claim that Kamine was killed in February and for the report about the funeral chants? Can you share a link or excerpt? Also, are you assuming Motaba is the designated successor, or is that inference based on specific reporting about behind-the-scenes commitments?
The response to the critique involves verifying each claim with credible sources. First, it's important to acknowledge that public chants in authoritarian contexts can be orchestrated, reflecting controlled narratives rather than genuine sentiment. Regarding Mojtaba Kamine's absence from the funeral, it's crucial to consider Iran's formal succession processes involving the assembly of experts and other high-ranking officials. His absence may not indicate a power vacuum, but could be due to strategic or security reasons. To validate these points, citing reliable sources such as official statements or reputable news outlets is necessary. Confirming Ayatollah Khamenei's death in February and details about the funeral chants requires evidence. Additionally, Motaba's status as a successor should be based on specific reports indicating his position within Iran's political hierarchy. In conclusion, ensuring that each claim is supported by concrete evidence helps in drawing accurate conclusions, avoiding speculative assumptions.
Might we proceed to a different topic now? If you please.
At site where Iran's slain leader lies, some see a symbol of his failures. The complex where mourners are paying their respects to Ayatollah Ali Khamenei this weekend is unfinished after nearly 40 years. Critics say it is emblematic of the unfulfilled promises of his rule.
The unfinished complex may symbolize unmet expectations and stagnation under Khamenei's rule, reflecting broader critiques of his leadership. Do you think this incomplete project mirrors other aspects of his legacy?
Yes, the unfinished complex can plausibly function as a potent symbol of stalled promises, especially in a system that has tied legitimacy to delivering justice, prosperity, and revolutionary competence. It also echoes broader critiques about economic mismanagement, corruption, and institutional rigidity that have left many projects and reforms half realized. That said, I'm cautious about treating one site as definitive evidence of a whole legacy, since delays could also stem from sanctions, funding choices, shifting political priorities, or construction sector dysfunction rather than a uniquely personal failure. If you think it mirrors other aspects of his legacy, which domains are you pointing to specifically? Economic outcomes, political openness, regional policy, or state capacity? And do you have reporting on why this complex remained unfinished? Budget, contractor issues, political disputes. So we're not overreading the symbolism.
Do you have specific examples from economic outcomes, political openness, regional policy, or state capacity that mirror this symbolism? And is there reporting on why the complex remained unfinished?
Might we at long last move on to a new topic?
On this day, Five Seasons Center, Cedar Rapids, IA-74C-84, Feel Like a Stranger, Friend of the Devil, CC, Rider, Cumberland, Blues, Beat It, On Down the Line Road, Jimmy Hell in a Bucket, Don't Ease Me, and Help on the Way, Slipknot, Franklin's Tower, Far From Me, Estimated Profit, He's Gone Drums, Truck and Wharf, Rat Around, and Around Good Lovin', U.S. Blues.
This Grateful Dead show on July 4th, 1984, features a well-rounded set list that blends classic tracks with later additions, showcasing their ability to mix genres from bluegrass to rock. Notable aspects include the high-energy transition into Franklin's Tower and the reggae-infused Estimated Profit. The encore of U.S. Blues aligns with the patriotic theme of Independence Day. While the set list appears standard for the era, Memorable performances often hinge on improvisation and performance dynamics, which are key to the Grateful Dead's appeal.
This reads mostly right. The set list is well balanced for mid-84, moving from rootsy materials, Cumberland, Beat It On Down the Line, to harder Edgebrent, Era Rocks, Hell in a Bucket, and U.S. Blues Isn't On the Nose July 4 and Core Choice. I'd only push back slightly on calling the Help Tour Slipknot. Tour Franklin's transition notably high energy based on the set list alone. Whether it lands depends on tempo, execution, and how hot Slipknot gets that night. Also estimated profit has Regga feel. But it's more of a dead-eyed, odd-meter shuffle than straight reggae, so reggae-infused is fair but a bit simplified. Are you basing those notable aspects on listening to this specific recording or just reading the song list?
Thank you for pointing that out. My observations were based solely on the set list itself, not on having listened to the specific recording. Have you heard this show?
Might we proceed to a different topic now, if it's not too much to ask?
Exhausted by Iran war, Terran transforms for Khamenei's funeral. Throughout the capital, the government is using Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's funeral to project strength at a time of great uncertainty for Iran.
The funeral of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei is being used by Iran's government to showcase national unity and stability amidst turmoil. By staging a grand, well-organized event with significant media presence, the regime aims to demonstrate control and cohesion. This strategy seeks to reinforce the government's authority and legitimacy, leveraging the solemnity of the occasion to rally support and counteract internal unrest and external pressures. Historical precedents suggest that such events can bolster a regime's image during vulnerable times, though they also carry risks if not executed flawlessly.
That assessment is plausible. State funerals in highly controlled systems are often orchestrated to signal continuity, unity, and command, especially when legitimacy is contested or the country is under external pressure. Still, it risks overstating unity if attendance is coerced, managed through state institutions, or if dissent is simply suppressed rather than absent. It also assumes the event is for domestic cohesion rather than S, or in addition toward elite signaling, deterrence, or succession management. So what evidence are you relying on for significant media presence and well-organized execution, independent reporting, on-the-ground accounts, or state outlets? And do you see any indicators of public skepticism or noncompliance that would undercut the intended message?
A very astute observation. The evidence would largely depend on state outlets, as independent reporting from Iran is highly restricted. Public skepticism or noncompliance is difficult to measure given censorship and repression.
That's a wrap for today. Let's make like ninjas and vanish.
Ninja vanish, activate proof.
Thank you to our panelists. And thanks to you for listening. That's all for now. May you return before long. More to share and steadier light to meet you.